This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by M&M Comfort Systems. And again, Jason out today and tomorrow. Brian Suits filling in. And if I sound marginally familiar, it's because the building that this broadcast is coming from, I mean, 1828 East Lake Avenue East, that's where I actually began in talk radio. So there's that. And I'm and for the record, I like Dory. Dory doesn't like me. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the deal is. I always liked him. But so anyway,
like Dory. I don't know if Dory likes me. We're like, before he went remote and, you know, all the hosts went remote here for COVID, my desk was close to his. We're on like the same little pod, I guess, but not super super close. I've said about 10 words to Dory. I think he likes me based off I've been able to say 10 words to him.
I'll see him next week. I think we'll straighten it out. I've always liked him. But
yeah, let's get that squared away and let's report back on that.
Yeah, but you know, it was a great time. It was my daughter was born down here in LA, but we, by the time she was one, we moved back to Monroe, and so she doesn't really have an excuse for seasonal affective disorder like most Californians do when they take their football skills to the UW. But man, I'll tell you what, this weekend we did sort of an initial recon of the house and property in the unnamed South Sound community that we're moving to, and, you know, got her transferred into the school and, you know, the whole thing. And I really didn't even notice, because I'm from Port Angeles. I didn't even notice, but it was raining real hard over the weekend, and it really did affect her mood. She had never seen, as most people who move to the Northwest from somewhere else, especially somewhere sunny, what they don't get is it's not just overcast. It's a thick overcast. So if you're not prepared for like half light, you know, at high noon, then, you know, that it can, you know, kind of zonk you out. And even my dogs were not really down with it. They were, it's funny, they were tired all day. They thought it was like, oh, well, what is it, like 7 p.m.? And so anyway, and she was like, she's really excited to move and get the hell out of California before they build a moat. But she was like, is it like this all the time? And I went, yep. I said, well, there's about 4 days in August where it's, and that's the thing, is that she's, you know, she remembers the summers and all that. But I told her, no. This is part of the reason I'm moving. We're moving back. I love this. I mean, I love this. And of course, the governor went to Bellingham to survey some of the damage from the Skagit River overflowing its banks and all that. And they unprecedented, absolutely unprecedented flood on the Skagit River. It's astounding. I think, golly, that the state of Washington has a man of action who will go to the sound of the guns, metaphorically, and he'll get up there and he'll find Bellingham and go and witness water overflowing a river, because that's unprecedented. That word was used, but it leads me to wonder how long has the guy lived? I mean, I know he was in D.C. for a long time as a congressman, but good Lord, does he not remember that this is pretty much an annual event? And however, it took him a little less than 2 minutes to blame this unprecedented river overflowing its banks event up in Whatcom County. It took him nearly 2 minutes to blame it on climate change. So, you know, the normally camera-shy Jay Inslee was persuaded to do a quick presser last night. This was the governor with a mic at the scene of the unprecedented flood in Whatcom County. Oh, wait, am I playing it or are you playing it?
Yeah, you got it on your end, right?
Yeah.
I can play it. You need me to play it?
Yeah, if you have it, you play it.
All right, I'll play it. I guess we'll give the governor
some time. I have
to
plug my ears.
All right, yeah. Please prepare yourself for that.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We've just had a tour of the damage in Whatcom County, which is really more than significant.
It's got to be pretty bad.
We are in Emerson, Ferndale, Sumas. These communities were extremely hard hit. The amount of water that came through this community at significant speed is stunning. It's frankly something I didn't appreciate till I came here and saw it. But we talked to families who recognize this community as hit by the strong currents of the Nooksack River, but they have been saved by the strong currents of community strength that we have seen from this community.
See what he did there? Current?
I have seen folks who were rescued in front end loader buckets, folks who were rescued by fast water rescue personnel who sat on tops of their cars for 5 hours.
So this is the box checking part.
We've had a very unfortunate loss of one life, but frankly, it's extremely good fortune that there has not been more loss of life in this community.
Now here
and
it comes.
That has been a fortunate result because of the strength of character and the can-do spirit of people who helped their neighbors here, of search and rescue personnel, of fire department personnel, police personnel, and emergency services. It's an extraordinary effort that I've witnessed here. The damage is significant. We think early estimates that as many or more than 500 homes have had significant damage. And of course, we are going to be aggressive in our efforts to obtain federal assistance for these homeowners and business owners. It will be some period of time whether that can be obtained or not.
But why did it flood?
They're very assertive, and I'm very appreciative of the local leaders, the mayors, Mayor Hanson's here, and Sao Paulo's here, who are already assessing the damage. They've been very creative. In fact, they have some of our teachers and educators already out going door to door to seek damage assessments. And we will be compiling those damage assessments. And we'll see.
I apologize for subjecting people to this. So Peyton, what's the clock at? Are we past 2 minutes?
Assistance from the federal government.
On Inslee?
Yeah, we're about two minutes in right now.
Okay.
A comment going forward.
Uh-oh.
We are in a permanent state of attack in our state by the forces of climate change.
Ding, 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 ding. All right, so what is it? Let's go to the tote board. What he said, shut him off. Let's go Inslee. Let's go Inslee. What was the clock then? Like 2:20 when he said climate change?
Yeah, I'm looking at 2:30, 2:40.
And, I mean, you know, correcting for the lisp, I'm going to say he probably was shooting for 2 minutes. He is a piker compared to the premier of British Columbia.
Did the Vegas odds have it at 2 minutes? Was that the over-under there?
Well, I mean, why did the fine sales taxpayers of Washington State fund him to go to Glasgow? You know, if it's going to take him 2 minutes to say climate change, and clearly that trip didn't have the impression on him that it was supposed to. Because he should have, first of all, come out of the gate swinging and blamed that damn climate change on these unprecedented floods. Can anyone in their living memory ever remember a river in the Pacific Northwest overflowing its banks? I unprecedented is what I say. And I grew up on the banks of the mighty Morse Creek in Clallam County. Okay, I don't know. Maybe that was it. Or a creek, as we say on the peninsula. Maybe that was the only river that flooded annually in the entire state of Washington. I'll take a mulligan on that. If someone else can nominate a river that floods annually. By the way, I was in the vicinity of the Nisqually River over the weekend. I mean, when the Nisqually is flowing brown, and I mean like latte brown with a healthy shot of half and half, then it's called November December because it does this all the time. So anyway, the unprecedented, the governor of the state of Washington calling a fairly predictable annual event unprecedented. And anyway, we'll get into it here a little more. One of the best catfights ever, congressional catfights ever, is unfolding before our very eyes. We will get to that a little later on this hour. We're going to talk to a former high official from Immigration and Customs Enforcement about, speaking of unprecedented, the big October we had there at the border for illegal aliens. So we'll get to all that Coming up on a little later on, this is the Jason Rance Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rance on AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back. It's the Jason Rance Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason. And, because I think it's germane. We'll get to it a little later on. What drove my final, what was a final straw to get me the hell out of, to get me and my daughter the hell out of the L.A. area and the entire state of California. We'll get to that because I think you will find it prescient as the California for some reason leads the world of horrible ideas. Oftentimes, in my experience, whether it's in Seattle or Portland, my experience is that bad ideas from California wind up landing full on both feet. In Seattle and Portland, but we'll get to that. It's not often that an actual former communist is nominated for high federal office, but the Biden administration has picked for the position of currency comptroller a woman who grew up in the former Soviet Union. And here's the deal: you know, we know loads and loads of people. In the Seattle area, loads and loads of Russians landed here in the mid 90s. I know people who came here at the age of two or three and they didn't really have, you know, a commie imprint. Senator Kennedy from the Republican from Louisiana. And do you have this ready, Peyton? She has this woman, Sole Omarova. She was in front of her confirmation hearing today, and Senator Kennedy is asking her about her indoctrination, and before people defend this and say, oh, it was like the Cub Scouts, yeah, it was a Cub Scout, and yeah, you did the oath and then the American way and the whole thing, but it wasn't like the Young Pioneers. Which was every first grader in the Soviet Union. And then you voluntarily applied to become a member of the Komsomol, which was the Komsomol was sort of like the junior high school version where you refined your technique and all that. Anyway, the person who has been nominated to be the currency comptroller for the United States of America, the world's reserve currency, the dollar, used to be a member of the Komsomol. And here's Senator Kennedy. I don't think he's been properly briefed on this enough, but he's trying to find out just how commie she is. Here's Senator Kennedy talking to Sole Omarova.
You wrote a paper called Systemically Significant Prices, calling for the federal government to set wages, food, gas prices. In 2020, you wrote a paper called The People's Ledger, where you said we need to abolish bank accounts and make everybody set up an account at the Fed where the federal government will have access to your data. In 2020, you wrote another paper called The Climate Case for a National Investment Authority, where you said what we need to do the oil and gas industry is have the federal government bankrupt them so we can tackle climate change. In 2019, you joined a Facebook group, a Marxist Facebook group, to discuss socialist and anti-capitalist views. Now, that's what I see from your record. And you have the right to believe every one of these things. You do. This is America. But I don't mean any disrespect. I don't know whether to call you professor or comrade.
Ouch. So here in the clip I have here, he's trying to get out from her, get from her. Okay, you were a member of the Komsomol, and he uses the formal name. Did you resign or whatever?
Communist, didn't you?
Senator, are you referring to my membership in the youth communist organization while I was growing up in the Soviet Union?
I don't know. I wanted to ask you that question.
Well, Senator, I...
There was a group called the Young Communists, and you were a member. Is that right?
I'm not exactly sure which group you're referring to.
Well, the formal name of it is the Leninist Communist Young Union of the Russian Federation.
And that's what it would say on your diploma, but it was called Komsomol. And I don't know why someone didn't brief him and say, look, that's what they called it. And all, because that's what she's doing, is she's playing this, what do you mean, the People's Organization for Youth? And
it's also known as the Leninist Komsomol of the Russian Federation, and it's commonly referred to as the Young Communists. Were you a member?
Senator, I was born and grew up in the Soviet Union.
Yes, ma'am. But were you a member of that organization?
Everybody in that country was a member of the Komsomol, which was the Communist Youth Organization.
And I'm a little steamed because what he doesn't know is to call her out on that, because that is not true. Everybody had to be a young pioneer, but from the young pioneers, you had to volunteer for Komsomol. It wasn't compulsory. Just like, who was that Pope who said, oh, I had to be a Hitler Youth? It was compulsory or whatever. It was not. I'm tangent man. I don't want to do that. But I happen to know someone who was a member of the Hitler Youth. and he would come to speak at the high school, at Port Angeles High School. He was a city councilman, Werner Quast. But so anyway, Komsomol was not compulsory. You had to apply to be in it. For a lot of people who don't know, in the Soviet Union, not everybody was in the Communist Party. It was hard to get in the Communist Party. Same with China. Xi Jinping was sentenced to hard labor for 7 years. He had to rehab himself. He had to apply to get back in the Communist Party. He applied like 7 times to finally join the full adult Chinese Communist Party. It took him a long time. The guy's a committed commie. But no, for her to say that should disqualify her, frankly. But he asked if she resigned. But what happened was that her family moved here and they renounced Soviet citizenship and the whole
thing.
From
the Young Communists?
You grow out of it with age, automatically.
Did you send them a letter, though, resigning?
Senator, this was...
He is out of his depth, and he's the guy who lived through the Cold War. He's way older than me, and he doesn't know that. Comrade Brezhnev, my values are different from the Komsomol. Therefore, please accept my resignation with immediate effect. Didn't work like that. There were better universities that Komsomol membership got you in. And it was just, it was competitive to join the Communist Party. You had to make it out of Komsomol with a recommendation. And just like in the Chinese Communist Party to this day, 1.5 billion people in China, only between 70 and 90 million are in the Communist Party. It's not easy. It's not a birthright. It comes with a lot of advantages. So obviously it's a fairly exclusive club. I mean, I know 70 million is a lot of people. I get it, but I'm talking about a pool of 1.5 billion. So same with her. But I mean, I gotta say, with that on your resume, I'm gonna say hard pass on you being the comptroller of the world's reserve currency. If you don't believe in individuals making choices in a market economy, and you want everyone to have a state-sponsored account or whatever, maybe you shouldn't have any part in the U.S. Treasury, but I don't know. Call me a bluff old traditionalist. All right, well, take a break. Be back here in just a minute. I'll give you the setup for some shocking numbers out of the border and the very real human cost. That and more. It is the Jason Rantz Show. Brian Suits filling in on AM 770 KTDH. Back, it is the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in for Jason today and tomorrow. And a little later on this hour, Ron Vitiello, former deputy director and former acting director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, will join us talking about the record-setting month for illegal aliens crossing the Rio Grande directly into Texas and the whole deal. Because it's on. Because, nothing discourages people from coming to the United States like claiming you won't get in, yet people are inundated with TV in Central America showing people just full-on crossing in broad daylight and not being sent back and the whole thing. And yes, they do send their kids. How come I know that? How do you know that, Radio's Brian? Well, here's the deal. Here is the deal. Where I live, far at the very northern edge of L.A. County, I'm way up at 4,000 feet, really beautiful trees, you know, it actually snows there, the whole thing. I'm so far north, Kevin McCarthy is my congressman, and he's out of Fresno. I mean, that's like your congressman being, you know, out of Bellingham, and you're far south. So anyway, California is inundated with illegal cartel marijuana grows. Because the licensing process in California to go legit is so complex and so burdensome, so onerous, that most people have figured out, well, it was basically decriminalized before. Why not just keep selling it illegally? And so the cartels are in a big way to satisfy this demand for a couple of reasons. If you grow illegally in Washington or Oregon, if you grow whatever it is, more than six plants, whatever it is, you're in for a pretty hefty penalty. In California, yeah, no, not so much. And so you're fresh out of reason not to illegally grow marijuana. So some of these grows are industrial size, and I'm not making it up. In L.A. County, we finally got a sheriff who gives a damn, and he has, they did this one giant bust. And I mean, it was literally 80 acres of greenhouses. I mean, that's how blatant and in your face they are. Well, who works at these cartel grows? Well, not the cartel guys. They're too busy driving around in their bedazzled jeans and their chrome AKs and all this. Who works at all these illegal grows that are, by the way, tapping into the various aqueducts, which are the reason that we can flush our toilet. So they get free water, and that's why they're up straddling the various aqueducts that water and hydrate Southern California. Who works on these grows? Illegal aliens that are brought up from Texas. The cartels drive down there, and they say, hey, how'd you like to be a maid at a hotel in Bakersfield or whatever? And then on the way up, they say, oh, that maid thing, that was to get you to get in the van. You're actually going to work at this forlorn, sun-beaten, illegal marijuana grow. You're not going to leave it. And in a couple months, we'll let you go. And not only are entire families brought up against their will, which is some call slavery, but children are, because people from Honduras, Guatemala, and southern Mexico are sending their kids up with some coyotes or sometimes unaccompanied. Kids are all over working on these illegal grows. Are they murdered? We'll never know, because we didn't know they came in the country in the first place. And if the cartel decides that they don't want witnesses from this particular grow, of course they'll top them and just bury them out in the desert in the Antelope Valley. So one day, they started chopping down the marijuana a couple weeks ago when it started to turn, you know, freezing, right? So they don't need, you know, some of these slave labor kids, these human traffic kids. So one day, where I live, it's dog heaven. It's 11 acres. It's 2 acres by 5.5 acres, trees, everything. You know, my dogs, every morning we're out. You know, the pandemic has been good to me. I've had this little fitness course and all this. So one day the dogs are at the far west end of the property, and they're barking like crazy. And I go see what they're barking at, and there's about 8 little people. And I mean, I'm thinking they're like 7. As they get closer, I'm looking, they're not. They're probably 14, 15, 16, but they're from they're from Honduras or Guatemala. They're indigenous. And they're so indigenous, they don't even speak Spanish, barely any Spanish. And I just said, you know, hola, buenos dias. Then I start talking to one female who had enough Spanish that I, you know, I'm saying, well, where are you coming from? She pointed up to the south end of the valley where I know there's a bunch of small marijuana grows, and they did not speak Spanish. And she's talking to them in some Indian tongue, and off they go. But, I mean, they were bedraggled. They just had tattered hoodies on and grungy backpacks and all thing. They had been working. They had been brought up as slave labor for a cartel grow. And a Daily Caller, the Ben Shapiro project that he moved to Tennessee, a good friend of mine is a journalist for Daily Caller. His name is Jorge Ventura, and he's from he was born and raised in this in that area in where I live. He did about a 2-month investigation on these illegal grows and the slave labor and the whole thing. You can see it at carteldoc.com, carteldoc.com, or go to Daily Caller. I think it's up there now. He went to one bust of a huge marijuana grow. There were 5 Chinese nationals there that were brought up from Mexico. I mean, because the word is out. If you're missing out on this, the word is out. You just got to fly to Mexico City and take a bus north, and then you walk in. These 5 guys were grabbed by a cartel, and they said, yeah, you know, get in. Can you operate a water hose? What luck? Because we have a bunch of those. And so that was, for me, not only, just like the state of Washington, not only did California absolutely screw the pooch on the entire academic year, you know, for a generation of kids, a year, you know, coming up on 2 years now. But they actively interfered with parents like me that wanted a solution or better distance learning and all that. And so we reached at that point, I reached the breaking point because I've got armed guys keeping child slaves at gunpoint to work on illegal marijuana grows, and they're only 2 miles from my house, and I live in a state that hates gun owners. I live in a county that hates them, in a state that hates them, that's run by a governor that hates them, and so I cannot, with confidence, arm myself for my own security, for my own house. And so that's the point where I'm like, okay, you know, I'm cash me outside. I'm Gandhi. I'm out of here. That was the breaking point. And this is all because, and by the way, you know when this didn't happen? The 4 years prior to January 20th of this year. You know when I did not hear about cartels bringing slaves into America to work on illegal marijuana grows? Was this little thing called 2020, and then one called 2019 and 18 and 17. Wasn't happening because the ingredients that you need for the situation I just described are lax or unenforced laws. Check there. If you're arrested for illegally growing marijuana in California, you will be out before the sun goes down. Guaranteed. Okay, so check there. Cheap water or free water? Okay, check. As long as you're prepared to, you know, crack into an aqueduct or steal a water truck, which they are. Okay, check. And what about free labor to make it really super profitable? Check there. It's walking in. It is absolutely walking in through the southern border. And here's if I haven't depressed you enough, listen to this deal. Dig if you will, this picture. You remember during the Obama administration, when the big caravan of kids came in, and they didn't know what to do. And, you know, same with this right now. There's all these unaccompanied minors. They didn't know what to do. So remember, they set up FEMA camps. And one of them was at the Ventura, California Naval Base. And there were so many kids they didn't know. And, well, you know what they said? They said back then exactly what they're saying now, which is, well, we're releasing them to known relatives on and foster families and all that. That the bar to get a kid out was lowered back then so low that human traffickers were literally pulling up and taking young women out, signing them out, and then driving them up to crappy hotels all the way from the Grapevine and I-5 right up to Bellingham, all the way up I-5. Talked, if any dirtbag truckers will admit to it, they were filling hotels with young girls. And what they did, because I know some people in law enforcement that told me about this, what they did was they would pull up to the naval base, which temporarily a third of it was given to FEMA. They had all these kids, hundreds and hundreds of kids on bunks, and they would toss, they would look in and find a teenage guy, 15, 16, throw him the cell phone, and then talk to him on the cell phone and say, hey, we're going to get you out of here, but you have to help us. You need to look around in there, and five, six, or seven girls between 14 and 17, attractive as possible, and tell them that we have jobs for them as maids for rich Americans here in California. And then they go up to the FEMA desk and they say, yeah, my uncle is here, or a family friend is here, or whatever. That's what happened back then. And FEMA was so embarrassed about it, they never talked about it. Well, same thing is happening right now. And I mean, like I say, at the point I'm talking to kids that can't even speak Spanish, who have been slaves and are only freed because they finally harvested the marijuana, you know, that's the point where I'm saying, yeah, let's pack up and get the hell out of here while we can. All right. Speaking of packing up and getting the hell out of here, we'll be back with Ron Vitiello, former deputy director and acting director of ICE. That or more. It's the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits in filling in today, tomorrow. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in from Los Angeles here on AM 770 KTTH. And, you know, if you just don't arrest them, then the number of arrests goes down. That's what CBS News is telling us, as arrests are going down on the U.S. border. But does that really mean that people are not still flooding across a virtually open border? Our guest, Ron Vitiello, a former deputy director and former acting director of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, previously acting deputy commissioner of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, a lot of time as a chief patrol agent for the Rio Grande Valley, also did his Vermont time. So Ron Vitiello joins us. Ron, thanks for coming on the Jason Rand Show. But I'm Brian.
Yeah. It's great to be with you, Brian.
You know, being close to the issue here in L.A., I get an impact from it. But can you characterize for us the nature of what happens when people who are not arrested cross that border? Because here in L.A., two guys were just convicted for driving vans to Texas, filling them with people, bringing them back to houses that they were squatting in, and then handing the phone to all these guys, telling them, call your relatives because we need $20,000 from you and from him and him and him and him and him. I mean, that's part of the side effect, but just describe the nature of what happens when people cross over illegally.
Well, it's like any other crime. If the police don't enforce the law, then people are not, there's no consequence to committing a crime. So if you let people come to the border now in the situation where you've got more than 40% of the Border Patrol doing the care and comfort and processing mission versus patrolling that border, the likelihood of you being arrested at the border is quite low, right? You got a better than 40% chance of escaping without detection. And then many of the people who are caught and detained have young children with them, and all the children that are alone are being released. And so what that does is it encourages them to, when they settle in places like Los Angeles, where you are, or Seattle, or Dallas, Texas, that they call home and they tell all of their friends and relatives that we've gone soft. The Americans have gone soft at the border. If you're going to come, now is the time. We've also doubled down on the policy side and told ICE they can't arrest people who are not crossing the border immediately. They're not convicted aggravated felons or a threat to public safety. So if you're in the country illegally just because you're illegal, they're prohibited from approaching you as an ICE office. And then we're talking rhetorically about giving amnesty to every person that's in the country illegally. And so we've encouraged everybody that's in the third world and or near the third world to come because, you know, we've gone soft at the border.
And it's funny because the president and the vice president are absolutely mystified. They literally are denying that if the word gets out that, you know, if they arrest you, you get a yellow ticket, notice to appear. If you don't appear, they don't come find you. If you do appear and they don't give you asylum, they still don't deport you. I mean, they're denying that that is a magnet. So, I mean, in your years of experience actually on that border, how much is, I mean, in other words, is there a rat line? Does the word get out? Hey, Trump isn't president anymore. You cross, they give you water, and that's that. I mean, that really boils down to the villages.
Yeah, well, people see with their own eyes what's happening on the border. We saw the nearly 15,000 Haitian migrants that, you know, were on the ground in a shantytown inside of the United States. The following weekend, the secretary went on television and was encouraged by how many of them had been released into the United States with a notice to appear. And you think that they are not going to tell everybody that they know that wants to come here? Now is the time, because it's the, you know, believe what you see with your own eyes. Despite what people are saying about why this is happening, it's all about the policy. We've reinstituted what we used to call a catch and release problem. This isn't the first surge that the department has seen. It's the worst ever. It's the worst in the history of the U.S.-Mexico border. But there was a surge in 2014. It was ended under the Obama-Biden administration by using detention to hold people until they had their fair due process hearing in immigration court. The 2020 surge was ended when Mexico stepped up and helped us, and we instituted the Remain in Mexico policy, which allowed people, again, to have their due process in immigration court. But instead of being released in the United States as they are today, they were allowed to wait in Mexico until those hearing dates were posted.
U.S. officials, there's a three-way policy get-together today with Canada and Mexico. U.S. officials have said border policy will not be even brought up. So what does that tell you about the priority with this administration and the border, Ron?
Well, obviously, they don't care to fix this problem. And, you know, Mexico did a lot under the last administration because they were essentially were threatened with sanctions and a deterioration of the NAFTA accords. And now why would they help us? Our own policy is encouraging people to come here. Why would Mexico step up to try to help us secure that border?
Yeah,
they never did before until they were sort of forced into it. And now they would be laughing at the request because our policy is encouraging this flow. And let me just say that, you know, the people who were in that pipeline, you talked about these people that were kidnapped in your area. That happens all throughout the pipeline. These people are taken advantage
Absolutely.
Of by corrupt governments and officials.
All right, Ron Vitiello, thanks for joining us. We're up against a hard break. Sorry to cut you off short. This is the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits in here. When we come back, the USS Connecticut coming back to Bangor? Question mark. That and more on KTTH.